Mark Kermode, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
How are you, sir? Welcome to Wimbledon 2005, and obviously you forgot had an hour and a half, 2 hours here, so you've been catching up with play on the outer courts?
No, I brought my DVD player with me, and I watched this very interesting documentary about a guy who did a bad movie deal in 1997.
You're at one of the world's premier sporting events.
Yeah, but I don't understand any of this. I have no idea what these people are doing. The people in green are apparently playing chess. The people in white are doing something in between them.
You haven't progressed in
any
year.
And your man next door came up with this brilliant phrase about the ball hit the net and went up and looked over either side of it. I thought that's poetry. I've no idea what you're talking about, but
your man next door, that'll be Ian Carter, I think it was, who was doing that. Show some more respect for your sports commentators. We have some movies to review. We also have a box office top 10, plus also a request, a letter which was handed in here at the commentary box. Could you get Mark to say hello to my daughter, Laura Beck? She thinks he's so cool, loves his comments on the film review slot, but we have to tape the programme because she's not back from school yet.
Hi, Laura Beck. You're fab.
And easily pleased. Movie reviews coming up for A Lot Like Love, Czech Dream, Evil in My Father's Den.
Evil in My Father's Den. Two different movies, as opposed to...
I thought it was Evil
in My Father's Den.
Well, it could be Evil in My Father's Den.
In fact, that would work.
Kung Fu Hustle and Toro Molinos 73, which is a very unpromising title.
And a very unpromising film.
Box office top 10 this week. 10 is Millions.
Which I like very much. Take your kids to see it as long as they're 12.
League of Gentlemen's Apocalypse, number 9.
And the disappointing stretches the 30-minute idea for an hour and a half and falls flat.
Paranita at 8.
Perfectly fine. A little bit, unremarkable, but fine.
House of Wax at 7.
Interesting only for seeing Paris Hilton meeting a completely grisly end. That may be enough for the price of admission.
Monster in Law at number 6.
Your friend, Jane.
My friend Jane Fonda.
Came out of retirement for this. She should have stayed in it.
The Pacifier this week's 5.
Not funny. Vin Diesel, kids, bottles, nappies, poo.
I thought that was your kind of thing, normally.
No, but, there's a difference between dealing with that stuff, in your real life and watching Vin Diesel do it on screen.
Sin City, this week's number 4.
Big, vacuous, noisy, nasty, unpleasant, rather good.
Star Wars Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, is this week's number 3.
It's off the top spot, finally.
And been there. And Me and Mrs. Smith, this week's number 2.
Mr. and Mrs. Smith, even.
No, it's Me and Mrs. Smith, it's the follow-up.
It's the follow-up. Okay, well, I haven't seen the sequel. I saw Mr. and Mrs. Smith, and I thought that was fairly empty, but Me and Mrs. Smith may be more promising. I didn't type that.
And the UK's number 1 is Batman Begins.
Which is great. It's how much more black could it be? None more black.
Well, is that what...
Oh, did you see it?
Is that what... No, is that what kids are going to want?
It's not what kids are going to want, no. I mean, it's definitely for the teenage market, calling that the older end market. But for people... If you liked Frank Miller's Dark Knight Returns, if you liked the idea of Batman being a dark, twisted superhero as opposed to Adam West in his underpants, then Batman Begins is for you. And also, if you were completely fed up with Joel Schumacher trashing the franchise with his friend Val Kilmer, then this is the film for you.
We were hoping that Val was going to be here today, actually. He's one of our special guests. And then at the last minute, he couldn't make it.
No,
which
really?
Is a real shame, because...
That is a shame.
The idea of you and Val being in the same commentary box together would have been absolutely perfect.
I wouldn't call him a plank if you didn't. Actually, that's not true. I would.
So we have lots of reviews to come. That's the box office top 10. I'm looking at the clock. I'm thinking it's probably going to be news time in a moment. But if you have any points to make about the tennis, if you have any observations, any questions, any thoughts for Mark, 85058 on the text, Wimbledon at bbc.co.uk. We'll do some reviews in a moment here on Centre Court. So we're giving you the box office top 10. What's new this week, Mark?
Well, shall we start with A Lot Like Love, since this is, the big budget, big splash, not even particularly big budget, romantic comedy starring Ashton Kutcher and Amanda Peet. Okay, here's the deal. If plagiarism was a crime, everyone involved in this film would now be banged up behind bars. You've got the romantic comedy with Ashton Kutcher, who's just completely rubbish. He was in that thing Guess Who, which wasn't as terrible as it could have been. And now he's in another romantic comedy, which isn't as terrible as it could have been. The best thing you can say about Ashton Kutcher is he's not as terrible as he could have been. And then Amanda Peet, who I quite like, but who clearly should fire her agent, because she keeps ending up in movies which really aren't up to her. So anyway, here's the story. So somebody sat down. The director is Nigel Cole. Nigel Cole's a British director who directed Calendar Girls, which I like very much, and Saving Grace, which I thought it was a nice little film. So the story is, and stop me if you recognise this story, it's a relationship between two people which starts off when they're young and they meet and they kind of get together, then they don't see each other for a bit, and then they become friends and they meet again a bit later on, and then they sort of split up and then they meet a little bit later on, and at one bit they're in a restaurant together.
Yes,
and she starts pretending to
When Harry Met Sally?
Yeah, okay, fine. So we take that plot from When Harry Met Sally, then we take the deaf brother out of Four Weddings and a Funeral, because that was a good idea. We'll put him in. Obviously he's nice and genial and he says all the important things that the film has to say. We'll also have a couple of
alter bound mix-ups, like that bit with Hugh Grant and Duckface, but not quite the same. And then we'll take that bit in Animal House when John Belushi stuck the two things up his nose, because that was a great, and we'll stick them all together, and we'll call it A Lot Like Love, actually. Actually calling it A Lot Like Love, the actually bit is obviously my... Now,
I'd work that bit
just
out.
To give you a general flavour of where we are. I haven't even heard... I don't know what the clip is that we're going to play, but we're going to play a clip that I think features the... Chosen at random. The marvellous acting talents of Ashton Kutcher and Amanda Peet. And I guarantee you, whatever it is, it's not going to be that good. Let's hear the clip.
I gotta ask you something.
Hey, do you mind?
Sorry.
What? What do you have
to... Well, what was strike one?
What?
New York. Strike two was that I didn't play guitar. Strike three was that I was born under the wrong star sign. What was strike one?
Strike one was that I had to make the first move.
I got strike one before we even met? You can't get strike one before you step up to the plate.
Ah, there I am. So if you thought that was long and ponderous, I think that's what Tony Adamson thinks about his match on Court 13.
I'm afraid I do, Simon. Anastasia Mskhina, the number 9 seed, has beaten Yelena Yankovic in the end. 6-love, 5-7, 10-8, 2 hours and 50 minutes. We've all watched matches when neither player doesn't deserve to lose. I've just watched a match when neither deserved to win, because they were both negative with winning post in sight. Mskhina, first of all, when she led by a set and 5-3 and couldn't finish it off, dropped three match points, and then when Yankovic led 5-1 in the third and deciding set and then got a fit of the jitters and got it to 5-all, and then Mskhina had another match point at 7-8. She failed to take that. In the end, she scrambled home 10-8 in the third, and it reminded me of, I think his name was Pavlo Nurmi, in a marathon way back in the Olympic Games when he staggered on his knees to the finish to win, and that's what this reminded me of. It really was a rather... forgettable match. But Mskhina won't think like that.
Tony, thank you very much indeed. A Lot Like Love, movie number one. Well, it's not an impressive build-up.
You could have taken Tony's review of the match that he's just watched and taken the names of the players out and put in Amanda Peet and Ashton Kutcher, and that's exactly it. I mean, what he just did was perfectly review the movie for me. It's a movie which nobody deserves to win. Nobody deserves anything at all. You know exactly where it's going. It plods along. You've seen all the bits before. None of the people are particularly likeable. I mean, I think the only thing I would say about it is it's a shame Amanda Peet keeps doing this kind of thing, because she was in that terrible Bruce Willis movie, The Whole Nine Yards, which was another great American movie that uses a sporting analogy that is completely lost on us. You noticed, incidentally, in that clip that was chosen, there was stuff about stepping up to the plate and strike one, which I presume is an American baseball analogy, and frankly, I could care less. I mean, this movie will come and go, and it will go to television, and people will watch it on the sofa at 11 o'clock at night. They'll think, I've seen this film before, three times, maybe four.
Phil Williams, good afternoon to you, sir, again, on the recently renamed Murray Field.
We are on Murray Field, indeed. It's just started raining, I have to tell you, which is bad news.
And now, you, I understand, have a rather splendid idea of what to do with Val Kilmer's centre court tickets, because Val Kilmer was going to be our guest before he decided he couldn't be bothered.
Yeah, court one we've got here.
Oh, court one, I beg
your pardon. And it just seems a bit of a shame, really, that Mr. Kilmer couldn't make it today.
He probably had to go to his handsome lessons.
Yeah, is that what he was? I was just about to say, really, before we give somebody a chance to win Val Kilmer's seats, I thought a 10-second Val Kilmer review from Mark might do well.
Well, you know, if you put Val Kilmer in a room with a load of pine furniture, I do think that the pine furniture would probably act him off the screen. I mean, it's not that he's a bad actor, it's that he's not an actor. I mean, there have been movies which Val Kilmer has been in that haven't sucked, like Heat, but it's largely because Val's not in them very much.
Right.
There you go. I think the message is clear.
Clear and understood. Well,
I'm assuming.
Couldn't think of a better time to try and give...
Can I give you my one-line review of The Doors?
Yeah.
No one here gets out awake.
It's very good.
It is very good.
Were you on the poster with that?
No, okay. Sadly. It was that, and the other one was The Island of Dr. Moreau, which I actually do think is Val's most terrible movie, that and The Saint. But The Island of Dr. Moreau was a film in which started off being directed by Richard Stanley, which would have been a very interesting film, and then Richard Stanley was pushed off in favour of somebody, I think John Frankenheimer, and then he made a very terrible film with Val.
Roddick is playing Bracciali here on centre and leads 2-1 in sets and 3-2 in games. We've reviewed... A Lot Like Love. What else is around?
Kung Fu Hustle. So we can't play a clip from Kung Fu Hustle because obviously it's a non-English language clip. But here's the basic setup. If you saw Shaolin Soccer, which is the Stephen Chow... Actually, it was made back in 2001, 2002, but it sat on the shelf for a while before it became a huge international success.
And it was this strange mixture of, on the one hand, soccer, on the other hand, comedy, on the other hand, kung fu, and a bunch of movie references, and it did really, really well internationally. So now Stephen Chow gets the chance to do whatever he wants, and he comes up with Kung Fu Hustle, which is basically every single thing that Stephen Chow likes thrown together into one big hodgepodge. If you know, if a joke comes along, you don't like it, you don't get it, don't worry, there'll be another one along in a minute. It's basically a pre-revolutionary Chinese Western musical fight sequence owing debt to, on the one hand, Chuck Jones's Roadrunner cartoons, on the other hand, Stanley Kubrick's The Shining. There are actually odd sets taken from The Shining. All the cast are dressed like the gangs of New York and the Martin Scorsese film. It's literally cinematic gag after cinematic gag, fight scene after fight scene, fight scenes choreographed by Wo Yun-Pen, who did all the work on The Matrix and Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon and Hero and those kind of films. Now, you may have seen the posters for these, which have got the most unbelievably laudatory quotes. One of them from our very own James King, who said, "It's so much fun, I can't believe it's not illegal." And another one from Jonathan Ross, who said, I think in typical Jonathan Ross fashion, "It's the most fun you can have without taking your trousers off." Now, I feel that that's slightly overstating the point. There are really interesting and exciting and fun things about Kung Fu Hustle. I mean, largely, it's really good to see a movie that has no intentions other than to amuse and entertain you. The plot is completely ridiculous. There is this place called Pigsty Alley, which is being set upon by a bad gang. You know they're a bad gang because they're called the Axe Gang. But it turns out that within Pigsty Alley, there are these two oldies, a landlord and a landlady, who actually are top-level Kung Fu masters, and they end up fighting another oldie but goldie top-level Kung Fu master called the Beast, who is pulled out of an asylum to have fights with them. That's the plot.
And this, in fact, a whole number of people,
yes,
Mark, making the point that actually, and I would agree with them on this.
Here we go.
Val Kilmer in Tombstone playing Doc Holliday was actually extremely watchable. His accent was great. It was a good film.
There are two interesting Val Kilmer movies.
Let's not waste too much time.
I'll be very quick.
Okay.
One of them is Tombstone, because I think maybe his accent is okay. The other one is Wonderland, in which he plays John Holmes, who was the absolutely drug-addled porn star whose life went completely to pieces. And Val is very good at playing somebody who's completely washed up.
As in Doc Holliday and Tombstone. So
yeah,
we're quite
exactly.
Right,
so
really.
that's the key thing.
So no play at Wimbledon at the moment. You have free range, Mark,
so let's finish
for a couple
of
minutes.
Let's finish with the Kung Fu Hustle business. So the thing is, there's an awful lot of stuff going on in it. And there's, like I said, there is a quite enjoyable central gag about the fact that the oldies are actually far more deadly than all the young gangsters that they're up against. The fight sequences are jolly good fun, although there's an awful lot of computer graphics in them. Now, at its best, it's kind of like The Evil Dead meets The Sound of Music. There's a fantastic sequence, a battle sequence, with these guys playing harps. And as they play the harps, these imaginary spirit-like daggers fly off the harps and fly towards the landlady, who can only stop them by emitting this great banshee howl, which is known as the Lion's Roar. So that's a great fantasy sequence. At its worst, it's kind of carry-on kung fu. And there is lots of, you know, sort of weird gags about landladies with fags sticking out of their mouth and fairies and fatties and all that stuff, which we don't do anymore in comedy because we realise that it's actually not that funny, but it still seems to have some currency in certain territories. So there are good things and there are bad things. Overall, it's really enjoyable and it's really entertaining as long as you don't want consistency and as long as you know that if there's a bit that's boring and a bit that's dull and a bit that's stupid and a bit that's spiteful, well, hey, In a minute, something else will be along. So it has a cumulative weight. It's not a masterpiece. By quite some distance, it's not a masterpiece. And it's not the most fun you can have without taking your trousers off.
Mike Simpson on this email says, after Tony Adamson's accidental success at summing up a tennis match as if it's a film, can Mark have a go at reviewing one of his films as if it's a tennis match? With his in-depth knowledge of tennis, it should be entertaining.
OK, well, in terms of, Kung Fu Hustle, it knocks the ball back and forth across the entertainment net, occasionally striking the net, peeping up and deciding which way to fall. And interestingly, you don't know whether or not it's going to ace it or whether it's going to end up, what's that word, love out. Whether it's going to go long.
I'm not helping you, mate.
Oh, well, there we go.
You're on your own.
Yeah.
Okay, that was dreadful.
Yeah, it was terrible.
Okay, what else?
It's leg
new?
Before wicket.
What else is new?
It's a game of two halves. Other stuff out this week. Torremolinos 73. Now, the marvellous thing about Torremolinos 73, quite apart from the fact that it's sat on a shelf for 2 years, which always tells you something you need to know about an independent film, this has got a quote on the poster from my very good friend Alan Jones, who describes it as being Boogie Nights with castanets.
Right. Torremolinos 73 is a Spanish-Danish co-production, classic Euro PUD. And in the press notes, the producers say that they're very happy to be forging new relationships between these two countries that have no cooperative artistic history in film before. And can I just say that on the basis of Torremolinos 73...
It's easy to see why.
Fill the space here. The story is an encyclopedia salesman and his wife... Because door-to-door encyclopedia selling isn't going very well, turned to making Super 8 sex films for the Scandinavian market. Well, he decides that he wants to be Ingmar Bergman. She decides that she wants to have a child. Jolly japes and hilarity do not ensue. It was one of those really strange things when you sit there watching, thinking, at some point, somebody must have thought this is a really smart idea. It's funny, it's sexy, it's offbeat, it's quirky, and no one went, no, it's just bad. Just leave it, just put the idea down, walk away from it, no one's got hurt yet. If you don't actually make it, it'll be fine. And I did watch a lot of it thinking, you know, is it a quirky social satire? Is it actually very sensitive? Is it actually... And no, it's just ugly and stupid and dull. And occasionally, wry, but occasionally wry is not good enough. Torremolinos 73 has been ripening on a shelf for 2 years and is very soon going to be passing through your local cinema swiftly, I believe is the word.
So on the poster, occasionally wry, but big, stupid and dull.
It's small, stupid and dull.
Small,
big, stupid and dull I could kind of live with. The whole thing's shot in these pastel shades that are meant to evoke the period setting. You know what those Robin Asquith movies used to look like? Like, you know,
what
Confessions of a Window Cleaner and Confessions of a Pop Star and all those things.
I
yes,
don't.
You do, because everybody does.
No, I don't.
Yes, you do.
No,
you're just
I
pretending
don't.
That you don't. There's a famous Robin Asquith Confessions movie in which you get the sight of Robin Asquith's bottom bouncing up and down in soap suds. And you think, only in Britain could they make this film. Well, hey, here's proof that in Spain and Denmark, they could do it as well.
Just because your other half writes books about pornography doesn't mean the rest of us.
It's not pornography. It's erotic thrillers.
Is
moving swiftly on.
I do beg your wife's pardon. What else is new?
Other stuff out this week. If none of that appeals, there's an interesting, although only partly successful film, which is a New Zealand-Britain co-production called In My Father's Den, which has a very fine central performance. In fact, a couple of very fine central performances, but is overall, I think, rather too ripe. The story is that a young man who is a photojournalist has left New Zealand because of bad stuff that has happened with his family. He comes back to New Zealand. The family life is still not sorted out, but his father has died, and he goes back into the family life and discovers a whole bunch of weird secrets that have been hidden within the family life that he has somehow repressed. Sam Neill, who's a very famous New Zealand actor, said in a documentary that he made about New Zealand films that all New Zealand films are either about people running away from their home because it's stifling and oppressive, or people staying in their home and going quietly mad.
Or miserable and wet like the piano.
Yes, exactly. Well, this, funnily enough, is shot by the person who shot the piano, but it's not quite so miserable, but it is a little bit wet. And it is another one of those classic, you know, this only happens in a certain brand of art house cinema. There's an awful lot of noodling. There's an awful lot of Patti Smith on the soundtrack. You know,
there's a lot of noodling.
Noodling. You know, noodling, when the film, it's not actually going anywhere, it's just pootling around a little bit. There's a bit of a flashback, there's a bit of a flash forward. There's a couple of scenes of people sitting around not doing very much. There is, I think, some emotional integrity in it. There are some great performances in it. There's a really lovely short story, which is sort of unspooling to the movie, which is very, very poetic. And as I said, there's Patti Smith's Horses is a very important part of the sound. For about two-thirds of it, I thought this is very good, very interesting, a very impressive directorial debut from Brad McGann. And then in the last third, it kind of falls down flat on its face and descends into melodramatic Freudian hogwash, which is a bit of a shame.
Hang on, so that's melodramatic
Freudian hogwash. Yes, because up until that point it had been...
Has the noodling stopped at that point?
Yeah, that's exactly the problem. That what happens is the noodling is perfectly fine, because movies that noodle and poodle are absolutely fine, but hogwash is unacceptable. Unless it's knowing hogwash, in which case it's comedy.
There's no play at Wimbledon. The covers are on. It actually isn't raining that much, but it is very dark, so the covers stay on for a wee bit longer. So that was in My Father's Den, not Evil in My Father's Den, because
no.
Evil is a movie in its own right.
Shall we do Evil?
Yeah.
Okay, Evil in 2 minutes, fine. Evil is based on a novel. It's a Swedish film originally entitled Onscan, and the story is that in 1950s Stockholm, a young man with a very abusive father figure is sent away to a public school, a public boarding school, which is run by, you know, the older boys are a terrible regime who force the younger boys to do all their skivvying and all their shoe cleaning, and if they don't do it, they get beaten up. And there is basically 2 hours of public school beating up in Sweden that tells you that, in fact, if you were in a particular public school in Sweden in the 1950s, it was probably really horrible. And then in the end, in the last 10 minutes, everything gets sorted out and there's a sort of moral. And I sat there thinking, that is really strange. I have seen this film several times before about American public schools, about British public schools. Some people have compared it to If, the Lindsay Anderson film If, which I absolutely love. Now, If is marvellous and it's inventive and it's exciting and it's, you know, it's kind of visionary. This is just, yeah, I'm sure life in a 1950s Swedish public school was really tough, but hey, I don't care.
So that's it.
It's right. Really, no, it's you know, it's dull, okay, and not good.
Right. So movie of the week.
Oh, there's
then,
more
Mark.
Stuff. I mean, is that you? Can I? There is. Do I have time to do?
25 seconds is all you've got.
Paheli, a Bollywood story about a young woman who marries a man. The man deserts her. A spirit who's in love with the woman impersonates the man, comes back, lives with the woman. They have a fabulous love affair, and then the husband comes back. There's singing. There's dancing. There's color. There's great acting. There's, you know, it's terrifically good, rip-roaring, romping fun. It's called Paheli. I think it has a big crossover potential, and I enjoyed it more than almost any movie this week. I think Kung Fu Hustle is better and more important, but Paheli, just for sheer enjoyment,
is your movie of the week.
Was my movie of the week.